Luke, chapters 56 to 60. Chapter 56, Fooling the Yapster. Oh no, bro. Darius backed up a step. I'm not messing with a dog. Jules grinned. It's not a Doberman. It's a Maltese. It's the size of your pinky, Dee. You take one look at that dog, you know that dog is mean. He's afraid of him, Izzy said. I'm not. Just don't like them. Uh-huh. The question is, how do we get the collar? She doesn't let Gigi out of her sight. March kept his eyes on Blanche and the dog. House was protected by an invisible fence, Jules said. So we can't lure her out of the yard. We were going to break in anyway. What's the difference? The difference is it's on a dog. Frustrated, March leaned against a tree. The air smelled good here, cool and spicy. He didn't know the names of the trees, but he didn't recognize the flowers. Yet this place reminded him of another city. Every time he reached for the memory, it danced out of reach. Why would somebody put an expensive jewel on a dog collar? Izzy asked. Because she's an idiot, Jules said. What about the wet paint? What was Alfie planning? I don't know, March said. I'm thinking he knew her routine. He knew the bench, and he planned to somehow get her to another spot, someplace easier for the getaway. Maybe. But I don't know if he knew that Gigi, the dog, had the moonstone. He felt frustration build. He couldn't figure it out. If she walks the dog at the same time every day, we could just grab the dog, Jules said. How hard could it be? Take off the collar, give her back the pooch. Look at all these witnesses, March said. There's cops on bikes and people everywhere. Maybe we could stage a mugging and save her, Izzy said. Everyone looked at Darius. He stepped back. So you all look at the dark guy. No way, I'm not conforming to racial stereotypes. Been there, done that with the pigeon drop. We're not thugs, we're jewel thieves. But we've got to figure it out and do it tomorrow morning. Oscar's plane gets in at 11 a.m. March tilted his head back and looked up at the tree. Then, out at the landscape. Fog was starting to drift in over the bay. Birds wheeled overhead, diving and circling. He almost got clobbered by bird droppings as they flew by. Lisbon, March thought. This place reminds me of Lisbon. When that pack of kids squirted mustard on Alfie's back and then cleaned him up and tried to lift his wallet. He laughed and tossed them some cash. Easier just to ask. Pequinos? He smiled. Uh-oh, Darius said. Dude has got a plan. Chapter 57. Such Helpful Children. Shopping list. Mustard. Food coloring. Wet wipes. Peanut butter. Bottled water. That night, as he drifted off in the Grimstone private plane at the airport, hoping for no nightmares, March heard the buzz of a text. He picked up the phone. It was from Mike Shannon. Good luck. He turned off the phone. The gang had decided to ignore Mike Shannon for now. If they collected the moonstones, they'd deal with him. The next morning, they all dressed in their navy blazers and white shirts. They combed their hair and dusted off their sneakers. "Where are we from?" "Chicago," Darius said. "Who makes the approach?" "Izzy." "Jules, got the mustard?" She held up a tube. "Ew," Izzy said. "We really made it look gross." Jules grinned and tucked it into her pocket. "And the signal is, such a lovely day," Jules repeated. "Everybody ready? Okay, now let's go get ourselves a moonstone." Izzy was on the lookout. As soon as she saw Blanche leave the house with Gigi, she streaked across the park and signaled them. Jules jumped from the bench and caught the lowest branch of the tree, then swung herself up and concealed herself in the branches. Izzy calmed her breath, smoothed her pigtails, and went to sit beside March and Darius. In just a few minutes, they saw Blanche in the distance with the scampering dog. When she saw them sitting on the bench, her mouth tightened. "Go," March said out of the side of his mouth to Izzy. Oh, what an adorable doggie," Izzy said, springing up and crouching near Gigi. "Can I pet her?" Blanche's smile was strained. "She doesn't like people." "All dogs like me," Izzy said. She reached out her hand. Gigi licked it, then snuggled closer to Izzy's ankles. Blanche tugged at the leash. "Gigi!" "No, it's okay. Look, she likes me." Izzy held out her hand again. Every time Izzy put her hand in her pocket, she came out with a little smear of peanut butter. Gigi licked her, her tail wagging crazily. March popped up. "Oh gosh, we're on your bench, aren't we? Have a seat." He slicked back his hair and smiled with what he hoped was a winning way. "I'm Arthur Fairchild, and this is Harry Windsor. If you want to reassure Rich Mark, just name yourself after a British king. Works every time." "I'm Elizabeth Middleton," Izzy said. "We're visiting from Chicago. We go to the Dunnington Academy. Wow, this is an amazing city." "You're lucky to live here, ma'am," Darius slid over, leaving room for Blanche. "That's what we were just saying." Blanche had hesitated, but the combination of blue blazers and a private school and the earnest smiles of the group encouraged her to park herself at the end of the bench. She kept a good distance from them, but she sat exactly where they wanted her to, under the tree. "Such a lovely day," March said. Suddenly, a plop of bird poop landed on Blanche's creaked khaki trousers. "Oh," she cried. Another plop, this time on her starched white blouse. Oh, ew! One enormous plop on the end of her long pointed nose. No! And one last plop on Gigi's groomed blonde fur. No, no, no! Screeched Blanche. The three, March, Darius, and Izzy, all sprang forward. "Harry, old chum, do you have those wet wipes? Let us help you, ma'am." Here, Darius tossed wet wipes and tissues in Blanche's lap. "I have a water bottle." March handed it to Blanche, who was picking up the tissues. Fumbling, she dropped the leash. "Gigi!" "Don't worry, I have your dog," Izzy assured her. "And I'll wipe that nasty poop off too, bad birds," she said to the sky. "Can we escort you somewhere, ma'am?" March asked. "You seem so upset." "Oh, I just want to go home," Blanche said. "Oh, what a mess." "Look," March said, "there's a cab." It would have been a stroke of luck, but it wasn't. He'd already paid the cabbie. Perfect. Izzy thrust Gigi into Blanche's arms, along with handfuls of tissues. Darius handed her the water bottle. March helped her into the cab. Don't forget your purse, Izzy said, shoving it on top of the pile of dog tissues, water, and wet wipes. They shut the door, the cab roared off, and Jules dropped out of the tree. They all jogged away, hearts pumping, and cut through the park. When they reached the museum, they hailed another cab and tumbled in, breathless. To the airport, March said. Izzy tossed him the collar. He held it up. The moonstone glowed. They crashed back against the seats, giggling like two-year-olds in a sandbox full of jello. Two more to go, March said. Chapter 58. Missing Moonstone. The exhilaration wore off after the toast on the plane to Gigi Poo. They had two more moonstones to get, and they knew where only one of them was. The blue moon was Friday, only 3 days left. Izzy briefed them on the plane. Renee Cass Reuter, super duper rich, former model who married a bazillionaire tycoon 5 years ago. Spent $2 million on the happily ever after wedding, except they divorced last year. Boo-hoodle, did they have to take a buzzsaw to the Ferrari? Darius asked. He got the $30 million apartment on Park Avenue. She got the mansion in Connecticut. Moonstone? Jules asked. A ring. Plenty of photos on the internet of her wearing it. March looked at the photo. Anybody else in the house? Izzy leaned forward over the tablet, squinting. Oh, no. What? Apparently, Renee decided the memories of her marriage were too painful, so she sold all the jewelry he'd given her at auction. March had a sinking feeling. When? Her gaze was bleak. Yesterday. And the buyer of the moonstone ring? Izzy shook her head. Anonymous, she said. Help me, Alfie. Before the plane touches down, I need a plan, because we have to hit the ground running. Izzy could not penetrate the auction house's records. This kind of security I can't crack, she said. I'd ask my dad, but last I heard, he was in Peru. Too bad mine left the CIA after he bought the island in the South Pacific, Darius said. Could we break into the auction house? Jules asked. Get Izzy to a terminal somehow. March frowned. There's high security in the big auction houses. Cameras, security guards, ID check-ins. Plus they have a photo ID lockout list. They have a file on every known jewel thief. It was hard for Alfie to get in without a disguise. March sat up. Disguise? He exclaimed, slapping his pockets. He dug out his phone. Yes, it's FX. He finally answered. Go away, Red Brick 107, Byway Corner. That doesn't sound very welcoming, Jules said. With FX, that's the best you're going to get, March answered. Chapter 59, FX. They stood outside a reddish-brown building on West 107th Street. Nate FX Spender, March said. He's the best tipster in the business. They call him FX because he never looks the same way twice. As a matter of fact, nobody is quite sure what he looks like. He used to do movie makeup, and now he disguises himself and goes to auction houses all over the US and Europe if there's a big sale of stuff like jewelry or art. He scopes out who's buying. If this was a big jewelry sale in New York, I guarantee he was there. He moves from apartment to apartment, never stays in the same place long. So will he help us? If he's in the mood, he's kind of eccentric. Like how? Jules asked. Hard to explain, March said, and pushed the button marked, "You go away. Just be prepared." He leaned into the intercom until he heard the steady fuzz that meant FX was listening. "It's March. I'm with some friends." A pause. "Look up," March commanded the others. "Why? Just do it." They turned their faces to the sky. "Just don't smile," March said out of the corner of his mouth. He felt perspiration trickle down his sides. Then they heard the buzzer, and he dived for the door. "He looks out the window and studies you," he explained. Then he decides if he's in the mood to let you in. "I guess we passed inspection." They took the elevator up to the fourth floor. March knocked on 4B. The door opened. The first thing they noticed was the blood. A river of it ran down the man's face. One bloodshot eye hung out of its socket and rested on his cheek. Izzy let out a scream. "Control yourself, young person," FX said. "The neighbors already think I'm weird." They walked inside the sunny apartment. The only furniture was a wooden chair and a small table, as well as a flat-screen TV that took up most of the wall. FX turned to Izzy. "If the eye disturbs you, I can remove it." "That's okay," Izzy said, looking everywhere but at FX. "March, I've been waiting for you to contact me, but let me remove my eye before we talk." The man who returned a few minutes later looked nothing like the specter who had answered the door. He was a slender, tanned man with green eyes and red hair. If March hadn't also met FX with curly hair, dark eyes, and glasses, and as a balding 60-year-old, he might not suspect that he was wearing contacts and a wig. "Your father," FX put his hand out for March to shake. "I'm sorry." March shook his hand and felt the strength of his grip. To his horror, he felt tears spring up behind his eyes. The suddenness of grief was like running full tilt into a sliding glass door. One minute you were on your feet, the next you were on the floor. He dropped FX's hand and quickly introduced the other kids. FX looked at Jules with interest. "The missing daughter, Alfie spoke of you." "He did?" Jules tried to keep the eagerness out of her voice. "Many, many times. Regret, loss, hope. That's life. He said you were fearless. And yet, he was afraid of you." He looked at her in March. "Both of you," he paused. "The Moonstones. That's why we're here. We're tracking them down." "Are you sure that's wise?" FX walked to the window and looked down at the street. "These are not ordinary gems. Do you believe that they have magical powers? Do you?" A high-pitched scream came from the kitchen, ripping through the silence of the apartment. March and the gang jumped. FX didn't flinch. "The kettle. I was making tea." He disappeared into the kitchen. "He's weird," Izzy whispered. "Is he going to come out with a hatchet?" Darius murmured. No, FX said, reappearing with a tray. Just ginger tea. I can see why the money is irresistible. 10 million, isn't it? 7. He smiled. She offered Alfie 10. Desperate people make desperate deals. There is a story. He began to pour tea. 15 years ago, Carlotta Grimstone was scheduled to leave on a charter flight to Paris. The plane crashed on takeoff. In the confusion, she was reported dead. Turns out she did not board at all. A year or so before that, a canyon fire in California destroyed the Grimstone Lodge in the spring, a time when Carlotta would traditionally have been there. FX passed around the tea in tiny cups. She has cheated death at least twice while holding those stones. There are countless ways to live in this world and countless ways to die. If we knew what lay ahead, could we avoid our fate? He sipped his tea. Apparently so. But if there's a way, why didn't Alfie know about it? March asked. He didn't. Not for a long time. But then I found something for him. He sipped his tea, watching them over the rim. But before we begin, I need to say that, unlike most thieves, I believe one should take curses seriously. If I were you, I'd wait out the birthday. Stay grounded. We already have 5 moonstones, March said. You have? FX looked worried, not impressed. The power is said to increase with each moonstone. And the dread. March knew that. The burden of them was pulling at him all the time now. He hadn't been able to put a name to it until now. Dread. And if you steal 2 more, you'll gain a fortune. But if you fail, what if you fail? What if you fall? You know about the prophecy? Jules asked. I know everything. Enough to say you kids are in over your heads. When you're in over your head, you've got 2 options, sink or swim, March said. Alfie's saying? No, mine. I'd rather swim. I think my dad would agree. FX nodded slowly, taking in their defiance, their determination. Fair enough. Wait here. He looked at March and Jules. And stay away from the open windows. Chapter 60. The Secrets of Merlin. He walked past them to another room. In a moment, he returned, holding a large, ancient leather book. He put the book on the table, and March peered at the gold letters stamped on the front. The Secrets of Merlin. I got this at a rare book auction. Supposed to be a copy of a copy of a copy, etc. Going back to the earliest oral legends. Alfie asked me to keep a lookout for it. 9 months ago, he flew here so he could read it for himself. When he opened the book, the odor of a musty, distant age rose from it. There's an anti-curse, something that's supposed to reverse the prophecy. FX put his finger on the page. Fortune's wheel reverses, thus fortune's child must bide. Till the night of rare moon rising, the portal opens, eventide. time reverses by your hand, the captured lights returning. Fate's wheels stop, then begins anew, your fate annulled, your future earning. Well, that explains everything, Darius said, as Jules took a picture of the page with her phone. Alfie said he had finally found a way to keep you safe. The trick of it is, though, you need all 7 moonstones. He was on his way to getting them when Oscar showed up. It didn't matter that Alfie had placed half of what he originally got from the stones in a Swiss account for Oscar. Oscar wanted in on the new Grimstone deal. So Alfie said yes. But only if he could be alone with the stones on the night of the blue moon. He still feared that something could happen, even at the very last minute. So he could do both, March said, reverse the curse and get the money. That was the plan. Risky. He would not want you involved in this. I think he'd want us to try. Here's the list we have, he said, pushing it toward FX. We only need to locate number 1 and now number 7. Number 2 was the Amsterdam job. He left me that stone. What about number 7, Rene Reuter? Jules asked. She just sold all her jewelry at auction. I know. I was there. So you know who bought the ring. There were a few minor celebrities sprinkled among the crowd. The successful bidder was some sort of television host of a crime show. March had a sudden sinking feeling. Do you know who it was? A burly gentleman with capped teeth named Shannon. Mike Shannon.